welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. And today is Monday, December 18th. This will be my last show for a couple of weeks because next Monday is Christmas and the following Monday is New Year's. And public access is not like commercial radio and television. We like to take a break because we know that Bill O'Reilly has won the war on Christmas and we're here to celebrate with him. So let me start with some old news. A lot has happened in the last week, and I've spent quite a bit on politics in the last few weeks because of the election and because of the Iraq study group and because the president doesn't know that you have to stop digging when you're in a hole. But before we go back to what's going on these days in politics, and there's a few new kinds of items, there's a few other things worth talking about. For example, I didn't realize this until I saw it in the paper, but they have. We now know who is performing at the Super Bowl this year, and it's Prince. Now, I got to tell you that in the last 3 years now, since the Janet Jackson wardrobe malfunction, we've had Paul McCartney, the Rolling Stones, and Prince. Now, does anybody notice a trend? Paul McCartney was I Want to Hold Your Hand. The Rolling Stones were Let's Spend the Night Together. Of course, this is back when they were dangerous, before they were in their 60s. And Spend the Night Together now means something different, you know. And then Prince, oh, I don't even want to get started. I suppose people would always point to sexual healing. But in fact, he was as raunchy as they come. But what's interesting is Prince is now a Jehovah's Witness, as you may or may not know. And so he begins to sound just like your parents. Prince was talking about Janet Jackson's unveiling of her breast at the Super Bowl halftime show 3 years ago. And he told Rolling Stone back in 2004, quote, "This culture is in big trouble. All you see on television are debased images. You saw the Super Bowl. I don't even need to say any more about that." "And who produced that?" he asked. Of course, that's a rhetorical question. It was MTV. And, of course, Prince has some of the raunchiest videos that ever appeared on MTV back in the day when he was a sex symbol. And he's moved past that, much as Madonna has is now doing children's books. But and Prince is a great artist. Don't get me wrong. I like him. In fact, what's interesting is McCartney, the Stones, and Prince, I have seen them all in the last, just in the last few years again. I've seen Prince a few times. He's an amazing showman. And I own a couple of Prince albums, but I don't put Prince on my turntable or on my in my car. Did I say turntable? I don't put Prince on at home. Very, very rarely. But when he comes to town, I don't miss him because he is an amazing performer. In any case, that's the Super Bowl halftime this year. Let's see. A little bit of politics. So it turns out that Tom DeLay took another one on the chin. The last of the Congress races have been settled. There's a former congressman who lost when DeLay reorganized the Senate, and not reorganized the Senate, but redistrict Texas for the House of Representatives. And he just won in a runoff against the Republican that he was up against. And so the redrawing of the Texas districts that picked up six seats back in 2004 has already lost a couple of those seats. DeLay's seat was lost because his name had to appear on the ballot, not the person that was actually running. And then this seat, and I don't think there was another one, but the Democrats are starting to make inroads in Texas, so you know that hell has frozen over. Speaking of freezing, the Democrats are saying that they're going to freeze earmarks for now. Now, earmarks are not the same marks that they put on cattle and on pigs to tell the butchers which ones they're gonna harvest. Earmarks are lines in the budget that members of Congress typically put in to steer money to specific projects, usually in their home districts. And so earmarks have gotten to be a big problem. In fact, under the Republicans, fiscal restraint's gone out the windows, and earmarks have increased dramatically in the last few years. And spending's gotten out of control. So the party of fiscal responsibility, the Democrats, are going to be back in charge, and they are saying that they're going to freeze earmarks. Now, they got a budget bill that the Republicans couldn't get through. They got some, you know, we haven't approved the spending bills for the current fiscal year, which ends in June. Or maybe it ends July 1st. The principle is the same. And we have these continuing resolutions that allow the current organizations to spend money at the same level they've been spending, but we haven't actually approved the budget, and we're halfway through the budget year. So the Democrats have to handle that in January. And what they would like to do, what they're claiming they're going to do, is continue this freeze right through the end of this budget cycle. So there'll be no earmarks this year, except the ones the Republicans squeaked through in the dead of night there a week or two ago. So we'll see if they actually do that. That would be smart, because then they could deal with the things they say are most important to them. They don't have to have a rancorous fight about earmarks, because there'll be some Democrats who won't want to give up earmarks, even though the leadership says we shouldn't do earmarks. And it would just get messy. So they will actually look like a party that can govern, and it would look like the adults are back in charge if they actually carry through with their promise. Or maybe it's a threat. I'm not sure about that. And let's see. Oh, you know, I'm quite amazed about all the press that Senator Tim Johnson's surgery has gotten. Assuming you have followed this, you know that a senator from South Dakota, Tim Johnson, underwent surgery last week. And it was pretty serious stuff. It was a form of heart surgery, I believe, and I'm not going to go into what it was or whatever. But immediately, I was watching the Tucker Carlson show, and I have to tell you, as I think about Tucker, now he's on MSNBC. He comes on after Hardball, so I usually am watching Hardball. That is the best political talk going, there's a couple Sunday morning shows or talks that are on a par with it, but night in and night out, you want to hear what's going on inside the Beltway politics. Hardball has the best analysis. So Tucker Carlson comes on after this, and, you know, he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I don't agree with him in a lot of cases because he's a conservative, but he is more reasoned than most talk show conservatives, most talk show hosts, and then many conservatives that aren't in talk radio or talk television. But he does great on me sometimes, and I was watching him, and when this thing happened with Tim Johnson, he and his group immediately went to, well, if Johnson dies, the Republican governor of South Dakota, will he name a Republican or a Democrat? And, of course, they would name a Republican, and then this balance of power shifts in the Senate to the Democrats. To the Republicans. Well, I'm sorry, but the day that this happens to this guy and he goes under the knife, they're speculating about what might happen if he dies. That's just a little too ghoulish for me. I guess it's the difference between living inside the Beltway like these folks are or outside the Beltway like I am. And it just was too much. And it wasn't just Tucker Carlson. The next day I heard other shows doing it. Chris Matthews has had surgery himself, and so he's only been on a couple of days recently, or he probably would have done it. But I like to think he'd have stayed away from that. You know, Tim Johnson is a well-liked senator on both sides. He's not a particularly partisan fellow. And so people are genuinely concerned about his health. So we'll see where that leads. But he seems to be fine. He's recovering nicely. And people have made jokes about it since then. So the good sign is he's on the mend. And let's see. News flash last week. This is the Washington Post headline, so I don't want to blame this on the U.S. But the headline in Tuesday's Washington Post says, to stem Iraqi violence, U.S. aims to create jobs. And they talk about how high the unemployment rate is. And It's at 70% in some places. And, of course, we disbanded the army, so all these guys had weapons, and but they had no jobs to go to. And instead of setting up something to give them work, we let that situation go because, you know, these things happen, and you can't prevent all of it. And it was the Rumsfeldian view of looting happens and unemployment happens. Well, what a brainstorm. Give these people jobs, and then maybe fewer of them will be out killing each other. Why didn't somebody else think of that? Why didn't somebody think of this 3 years ago? Of course they did. It just never got implemented and never got any attention. We're not going to go into that whole story again, but I just thought that headline was hilarious because it's a little late to be creating jobs, I'm afraid. I could be wrong. In any case, let's move on to some newer news. Still some interesting things. The post office has changed their policy. Now, it turns out that it used to take 10 years after someone's death before they would put you on a stamp. And they just changed that rule. The Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee recommended a change to 5 years, and I think the Postmaster General has accepted that. So it used to take 10 years, now it only takes 5 years. And I'm of two minds about this. A, it doesn't matter. You know, we put everybody from Mickey Mouse to, I was going to say Donald Duck, but those are kind of in the same category, from Mickey Mouse to Marilyn Monroe. Oh, how is that for alliteration? On our stamps. And so you can't take this stuff too seriously. It's not like we're honoring people at the level of when you put them on a coin. There are many, many, many more faces and items show up on stamps than on coins. But it is a part of American culture. And so there are certain things we wouldn't put on stamps that other countries might put on stamps. But what I thought was interesting was the way they talked about this. And the way this came up was a number of political leaders, I assume liberals, had asked for an exception to the 10-year rule for Rosa Parks, who died last year. And they'd like to have her on a stamp and not have to wait 9 more years. By the way, the only exception to the 10-year rule up until now has been the presidents of the United States. Any former president or current president, when he dies, the next year on his or her birthday, the Postal Service issues a commemorative stamp for that president. And that seems like a reasonable thing to do. And you don't have to wait for their legacy or whatever. You're just going to honor them on a stamp. You're not giving them a coin yet because a stamp has a certain run and then it's over and then they put Mickey Mouse back on. So it's not a problem. But what I thought was interesting is what the Postmaster General said about this. Quote, well, the first part's a little bit boring, but in this era of instant communications, I think it's a reasonable suggestion, and it will allow us to honor a subject's lifetime achievements while their memory is still relatively fresh in the public's eye. Well, is that what it's about? Remembering people while they're current? But what's funny about that, there was something else. I guess it was just this notion of honoring their lifetime achievements while their memory is relatively fresh. Why not wait to see if those lifetime achievements are important enough? Because the article goes on to talk about, with the five-year change, next year they can now consider people who died in 2002, not people that died way back in 97. Not only in 2002, they've skipped over 5 years. So if it was 10 years in 2006, they can only honor people that died 10 years ago. So now they got 5 years to catch up on. 97, 98, 99, 2001, 2002. But they pointed out that in 2002, the candidates would be people who died, I'm sorry, the candidates for stamps in 2007 would be people who died in 2002, such as Milton Berle, Peggy Lee, Rosemary Clooney, Sam Snead, the golfer, clothes designer Bill Blass, sports hero Ted Williams and Johnny Unitas, and jazz musician Lionel Hampton. Now, just the fact you have to tell people that somebody's a clothes designer, a golfer, a sports hero, or a jazz musician means these people ain't all that famous. Now, actually, I knew everybody on this list and have a great deal of respect for several of them. In fact, it's the sports people. Because achievement in sports is pretty difficult. It's difficult in all these areas. I like Lionel Hampton, too. In any case, I just have a problem with Bill Blass, just as an example. So let's go back to the Postmaster General. Okay, keep in mind he's a general. And the Postmaster General says, we want to honor a subject's lifetime achievements. Well, I know Bill Blass is famous as a designer, but exactly what is the lifetime achievement that he's given us? I mean, he's amassed a lot of money and fame, and his name is on a lot of clothes. Anyway, I don't want to give him too hard a time, but I guess I'm just not enough of a fashion nut. A new report out this weekend says that Fidel Castro is very close to death. He's very ill, and our intelligence agencies believe that we're looking at months, not years, and Castro will be gone from the scene. Now, if you remember, he relinquished power to his brother, Raul, back at the end of July, I think it was. And Raul's been in charge ever since. And I think it was just today or yesterday that the Cuban government said that Castro's doing fine and he will be back. Now, that's the first sign that I would take to mean that he's probably dying and they're trying to reassure people. It'll be interesting to see what happens when he does pass away. But I'm assuming Raul will maintain power for a while. He's got talents of his own. It'll be interesting to see what the rest of the country wants. And frankly, what the United States does, because we've had this dumb policy towards Cuba for over 40 years. You know, we trade with China because they're so big, it'd be hard not to. But Cuba's so small, we can afford not to. But 40, 45 years of this policy hasn't worked. So at some point, you think you change the policy. I guarantee you, if within 10 years after, you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis, by 72, if Nixon had figured out that it made sense to change, reverse the policy in Cuba, and this would be long before the Cuban exiles in Miami became such a potent voting force, all well beyond their numbers. They shouldn't have this kind of huge voice. We'd have started trade with Cuba, and by now, Castro would have fallen. You know, that brings me really to Iran. The elections were just held, some local elections, and for some religious structures and groups and organizations that help elect the real leader Iran, the religious leader, not the secular leader, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. But Ahmadinejad's people took a bath. They seem to have lost power in these elections. And so it's being initially read as a rebuke to Ahmadinejad and his extremist statements. Of course, they just had that Holocaust deniers conference in Tehran that David Duke went to, among others, the former Ku Klux Klan leader in this country, who's convinced as well that the Holocaust didn't happen, or that it's overblown, I guess, is the problem. Anyway, I've said for some time, and there's a few experts, I think, that agree with this, that if George W. Bush hadn't singled Iran out as part of the axis of evil and hadn't been rattling the saber for the last few years, the Iranian people would not have elected someone as radical as Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. Look at how it works in this country. The Republicans were fond of going around saying that Osama bin Laden wants George Bush to win. I'm sorry, wants the Democrats to win because they'd be easier to roll over. Actually, I always believed that Al-Qaeda would want Bush in there. You want a bull in a china shop when you're trying to wreak havoc. And that's what a non-diplomat is. But in the case of Iran, why don't we see it? that when we rattle our saber towards them, they circle the wagons and elect somebody even more radical than they would have. So it'll be interesting to see, but I've been of the belief for some time that had Bush known what diplomacy was all about, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad would not have risen to power, and I don't know exactly where we'd be with Iran. We might still be in a stalemate, but we wouldn't be in this frenzy we're in now, frenzy of fear and everything else that's going on. In any case, there's a number of other things to talk about when we come back.